Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Africa's AIDS orphans growing up in a moral void. A new accord between the Vicariate of Rome and the city's central archaeological body aims to speed up the construction and restoration of churches. And the Middle East's Catholic Maronites, some of the rites of one of the oldest communities in the region loyal to the Pope. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Those are the stories we'll be looking at over the next half hour. Thanks for joining me. Tara is 9 years old, and she should be in fourth grade at school. She's not because she's taking care of her four younger brothers and sisters of 1, 3, 5, and 7 years. Tara's parents died 1 year apart of AIDS. Sometimes Tara gets help from her aging grandmother living in the next village, but for the most part, it is up to her and to her 7-year-old brother Samuel to find food and clean water each day. Tara and her brothers and sisters live in Zimbabwe, where they are not alone. Some 1.6 million children like them have lost one or both of their parents to HIV/AIDS. 3,000 Zimbabweans die every week in this southern African country, among the worst hit by the pandemic. Sister Janet Ferns, who as a former missionary in Zambia saw the devastating consequences of AIDS on children and their families there, recently sat down for a talk with Zimbabwe's Archbishop Pius Nakube. The Archbishop accuses the Harare government of doing too little to prevent the spread of AIDS and to assist these orphans. Many live in appalling conditions with little to no health care or schooling and often fall victim to unscrupulous predators.
Zimbabwe is in a very bad state now, and people are thinking of food. I mean, certainly more people die in Zimbabwe than even in Darfur and in Iraq. This is true.
There is a saying that when everything is said and done, there's a lot more said than done. Huge sums of money have been spent across the world in promoting AIDS awareness, but governments still do things that promote the spread of the disease. When allocating teachers to schools, for instance, there is no recognition made of their marital status, and so husbands and wives find themselves at the opposite ends of the country. Archbishop Pius Nkube of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, is only stating the commonplace.
And the reason is this, that, right, there's an AIDS crisis there. Since 1985, the government has done little to assist that AIDS crisis. The government, even today, you get two teachers who are married. They'll put the one teacher up in the Zambezi and the other teacher down in the Limpopo. These people are married, and the government has never taken any steps to see to it that people should live together. Couples live together to reduce. I mean, 500 to 700 are dying per day in Zimbabwe. I have priests who have buried 3, 4, or 5 people a day, each with their own funeral. And it's very depressing for a young priest to be burying 4 people in one day.
The same thing is happening throughout Africa. In Zambia, I personally used to see the day-long, unending procession of funeral corteges wending their way between Lusaka's University Teaching Hospital and the cemetery at Leopard's Hill. The cemetery had become so full that, in order to bury someone, mourners could not avoid standing on other graves. The story in Zimbabwe is identical.
We have 1,300 orphans below the age of 18. We have young girls of 15 looking after 3 or 4 of its younger brothers where both parents have died. So we are living in such a hand-to-mouth situation.
And when you have child-headed households, you've got children trying to look after the feeding, the education, the clothing, and the health care of other children. without the knowledge and the experience.
Yes, it's heartbreaking. It could make you weep. In my diocese in Bulawayo, we have what is called Archdiocesan AIDS and Orphan Care Program. It's supported by Catholic Relief Services. I sit in the committee there and listen to the workers about things happening there. It's absolutely heartbreaking. These youngsters, they are left all alone. And you are 15, you are expected now to act like a 40-year-old. These youngsters are often also exploited by neighbors. It's not uncommon that this poor 15-year-old girl finds herself pregnant because she's trying to look for money to sustain her young brothers and sisters.
So many children find themselves forced to give sexual favors in return for school fees, school uniforms, textbooks, and exam results.
Often their property is taken away by other human predators who are, they know that these youngsters, they can hardly defend themselves, but usually we try through justice and peace to defend them, even legally. It's quite a shock. I mean, I don't know what type of people we will have coming from that messy situation where a little child is looking after other children. This little child doesn't know any culture, has not been trained in any responsibility, doesn't know any values, strong values. This little child is such like a little animal that has to survive on what is around it. I just don't know. A new generation is developing of people who don't know their roots, who just look at survival and who don't think of any morals, who don't think of any future. As long as they've had enough to eat today, it doesn't matter how they got it, whether rightly or wrongly, it's fine. It's quite heartbreaking. I fear for the future. I don't know what type of new generation we're going to have.
But it's also very tough on the elderly who are looking after their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, and who had thought that their days would be ended in comfort with their children looking after them, and suddenly their children are not left.
Yes, I think some of these, because so often father and mother die, and these youngsters are then left in the hands of an old lady who's 80 years or so. And many of these old ladies, they don't have really a plan about when I die, what happens to these children. The government itself, being so self-centered, hasn't put in process, and this problem has been around for the last 22 years of AIDS in Zimbabwe. They've never put in place anything like a social welfare system or support system for all these orphans, because they are so engrossed in the money-making for themselves and in corruption that they've never really thought very deeply about Plan B. What happens when the old granny dies? And I think many of these grannies, they die quicker because they are so stressed, they are so heartbroken, and there's no one to support these orphans, and here they are, because sometimes it's quite shocking.
But it's also very difficult if somebody is old to have to suddenly start working again, a full-time job, to support little ones.
Yes, I think we in Zimbabwe, perhaps as well as other parts of Africa, we must think hard. Because, I mean, often you find that this old lady had perhaps 8 children. 5 of the children die, or 6. And and their partners die also. And all the children have died to be looked after by the old granny.
The United Nations World Food Programme will supply some food for AIDS patients and their families. There is also a Food for Work programme, whereby women are paid with food for taking part in a particular project. But those projects are frequently involving road maintenance and road building, I have personally regularly seen groups of women wielding pickaxes and carrying heavy stones, even the grannies.
We ourselves even reasoned strongly now to say, how do we solve this problem? We just leave it to chance. I mean, how often have I seen a situation where a man's wife dies, and it's clear that she has died of AIDS. And 3 months later, another woman comes and parks herself there, lives with the same man. Well, she's also going to clearly die of AIDS. But sometimes there's no logic. We kind of think instinctively. So we should plan properly and systematically. And when such things happen, the family should sit down and ask each other, what do we do? Yeah. And then another thing, there's too much of a taboo, no speaking about sex. We just have to be open to speak about sex. Okay, I know that when we grow, we begin to have sexual feelings as natural. I think when you talk to the children and when we bring them to workshops, sometimes the church is running AIDS awareness workshops. We bring these youngsters for 3 or 4 days and they hear from other youngsters. They come back from there, they are strengthened, and then they tell you, yes, really, we were very impressed how other young people of our age, how they prevent allowing themselves to get into this situation. The big problem in Africa, sometimes there's too much silence. Yeah, we have to be open because, I mean, I have a lot of relatives and cousins and so on who died, and it was clear that is AIDS. But you hear people saying, hey, you know, this one is sick. We don't know what happened, but it's clear that it's AIDS. All the symptoms of AIDS are there. Unless we become open and talk about it and say, now let's take steps to prevent it, we're going to continue in that mess.
A very worrying future indeed for coming generations in Zimbabwe. That was Archbishop Pius Nakube of Zimbabwe speaking to Sister Janet Ferns. In a city as ancient as Rome, it's not unusual to find churches that aren't just places for worship and prayer. Many of the Eternal City's more than 900 churches and chapels, built from the earliest Christian times through to the 20th century, are famous architectural and artistic monuments in themselves, some spanning almost 2,000 years of history. Many of Rome's churches are found in the ancient heart of the city and nearby suburbs, but that seemingly vast number of churches is not enough to meet the needs of residents as the city expands outwards. So, though Rome is the home of the Vatican and the Catholic Church, it's not surprising that there is a pressing need in this, the 21st century, for the construction of new churches in these outlying areas. But as anyone living here in Rome can tell you, major construction projects are frequently bogged down because ancient ruins are often discovered once the digging starts. Now, the Vicariate of Rome and the city's central archaeological body have signed a joint agreement aimed at speeding up the construction of new churches and pledging greater cooperation in the restoration of churches located in areas of archaeological significance. Susie Hodges asked Christian art historian Professor Elizabeth Lev about how easy it is to reconcile this dual role, the spiritual and the historical, of churches in a city like Rome. Professor Lev says this new agreement should make it easier for archaeologists and city and church authorities to cut some of the red tape.
Well, this agreement, this understanding between the Vicariate of Rome and the archaeological superintendent of the city of Rome has precedence going all the way back to the Lateran Pacts, which were revised in 1984. There have been several different agreements made between the bodies, the government bodies that watch over works of art and archives and libraries. And now, finally, in this year, we have the possibility of the archaeological body taking an interest in or dialoguing with the church about taking care of church building, recouping a liturgical or a pastoral function of a church building situated in an archaeological site, and very important to the city of Rome right now, the possibility of making it easier to build new churches in the city of Rome.
Now, you talked about churches that are located in an archaeological site. Can you give us some examples there?
Well, Rome, the Roman Empire, having been the capital of the empire, basically everything is an archaeological site here. Several churches were intentionally situated into ancient Roman sites. So one of the most famous examples that visitors to Rome would know would be the Church of St. Clement, or San Clemente, as we know it around here, which is a remarkable three-level building. But the lowest level is a domestic home from the first century AD, and in it was actually a pagan shrine, and then directly above it you have a church built in the 4th century, and then on the top floor you have a functioning church that still celebrates Mass today and is run by the Irish Dominicans. So you run into a funny little problem with when work has to be done on these lower levels. Do you close the church? How can the state work to maintain this important archaeological patrimony, but at the same time not interfere with the liturgical and the pastoral needs of the church?
And how they managed this in the past? Was it just been a juggling act, an ad hoc one?
Well, in many occasions there have just been eternal church closings. I mean, everybody knows there's a very famous gag in Rome called the Church of Santa Maria Sempre Chiusa, which is the Italian for Saint Mary always closed. And there are some churches which are eternally closed for restoration. You can't go see them. Lord, you'll never get to go see a liturgical function, or you'll never go to Mass there. And so this slow time and this lack of ability to get things done quickly is something that this agreement is really setting out aggressively to fix.
So it's trying to speed things up, but of course one of the reasons why things grind to a halt is because every time you start to dig or to build something new in Rome, you stumble across ancient ruins, don't you?
Yes, exactly. And this is a very important facet of this new agreement, because Rome has developed exponentially over the past few decades. And there are pockets of the city which have been developed in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and they don't have parishes. And the Diocese of Rome is concerned about that. But every time they go to build a parish in an area like Via Appia, the ancient queen of roads of Rome, or they want to build in the Tiburtina, the road that led to Tivoli, the minute you lay foundations, the minute you try to rezone something, you bump into some ancient monument. And then the archaeological body of the city has to be involved. Things slow down and churches don't get built. And the needs of the faithful are not tended to.
The church has long been keen to build new churches, but how many, in fact, have managed to be built, you know, have overcome these obstacles, shall we say, in the last decade or so?
John Paul II noted the lack of parishes in Rome and declared a goal at the beginning of his pontificate of 50 new parishes in Rome, of which about 10 have been built. There are very, very few constructed. Some are very famous. So the very famous Jubilee Church, the Millennium Church by Richard Meyer, a really spectacular monument. Some other smaller churches, simpler churches, but really the project is still limping along, and in many cases because of these delays due to a lack of understanding between the diocese and the archaeological body. So hopefully this agreement will help to move these constructions along.
So how many new churches are in the pipeline at the moment? Do we have any idea at all?
Well, there are many plans going on. I mean, there are the areas that the new churches need to be situated in, the new territories have all been delineated. There are competitions and projects for Italian architects, European architects. So there are, even as we speak, another 10, 15 already in the pipeline. But there are always financial difficulties. There are, and in this case, there are also difficulties simply with dealing with a space as old and with such a rich archaeological history as Rome.
Now, going back to, shall we say, the more historical side of the city, Are there likely to be any sort of famous historical monuments, come churches, that are likely to be on the list for restoration projects as a result of this agreement?
Well, there are a great many churches in the area of the Aventine, and particularly in the Forum itself. It's something that many visitors to Rome don't really realize, is that the Forum was filled with churches at a certain point from the 6th century on. And a church that is perpetually under construction and is very a good restoration project moving right along is the Santa Maria Antiqua Church. The ancient church to St. Mary contains these frescoes, one of the very few examples of 8th century, 7th century frescoes. And so these are churches that, although we don't know if they can ever go back to having a liturgical function again, however, they are in the midst of being recouped.
And when it comes to the finances, who is paying for this? How are the costs split, if they are being split?
Well, in the earlier, this agreement is based on earlier agreements made between the body for the conservation of artistic patrimony of Italy. And in general, the Italian state has provided most of the funding for the reconstruction or the maintenance or whatever necessary work has to be done in order to allow access to an archive or a work of art. One imagines that with this new agreement, the same principle will hold. It is the city of Rome. It is the diocese of Rome that will have to provide the funding for the building of those 50 new churches. However, when it comes to restoring a church, when the archaeological body is interested in conserving or protecting or taking care of a pre-existing church, it is generally the superintendenza or the superintendent's office who takes care of the payment of that.
Building a new church must be quite a costly operation, though. I mean, where's the diocese going to find the funds for this?
The building of new churches is a very costly enterprise, and some of the churches have been made really quite simply. They were prefabricated. There is one of these 50 new churches is a prefabricated structure, which clearly is not going to last quite the same way St. Peter's will. The other church, the one built by Richard Meyer, is a very beautiful, very powerful construction with the absolute latest in technologies. The diocese used to arrange a series of concerts every Christmas as a kind of funding and an awareness project to keep this plan going, to keep the funding in. And now, with the suppressing of these Christmas concerts, they're going to have to find other ways to bring this to people's attention to help the city.
And a very warm thanks there to Professor Elizabeth Lev, a Christian art and architecture historian with Duquesne University here in Rome. She was speaking to Susie Hodges. The oldest Catholic communities in the Middle East, the Maronite Church, has been loyal to the Pope here in Rome since the 4th century. Throughout the ensuing centuries, Maronites have had to take refuge from waves of persecution in the northern mountains of Lebanon. Today, they're found all over the world, many having fled war at home. Well, I sat down with Maronite Father Jean Mohana, head of Vatican Radio's Arab department, who told me more about this Eastern Rite Catholic Church.
The Maronite Church belongs to the Syrian Antiochian Apostolic Church.
Way back, centuries ago, back in the 4th century, they spoke Aramaic, didn't they? Which, of course, was the language of Christ.
Yes, of course. But it remains till the beginning of the 17th century only, especially in the north of Lebanon.
But Aramaic was used.
It was used only during the liturgy, the masses, and some people studied. It was taught in the clerical schools for the people also, but for liturgical use only.
How does the Eastern Rite liturgy and the ceremonies, how do they differ from the Roman Catholic liturgies? I've been to a wedding. I've been to a Maronite baptism
My own baby girl was baptized by the Maronite priest in the church here in Rome. And there are some beautiful ceremonies, which are different from the ones that we Roman Catholics celebrate in the Mass.
Yes, of course.
And so
each, Eastern church has its own characteristics, but the sacraments are the same. It's like you are American, I'm Lebanese. Everybody has his language,
back,
culture
right?
back. So mm-hmm. it's an expression, but mm-hmm. the same faith, the same sacraments expressed in different ways.
Mm. For example, in the wedding ceremony, the couple is given a crown to wear.
Yes, a crown. That mm-hmm. means it's like they are groom and bride. That means like the wedding between the church and Christ. And that's why it's like a queen and a king in the church. And that means the blessing of God, like in the Genesis, mm-hmm. When God said to Adam, "You dominate all the creatures, it's up to you." That means we are gods in the view of God also. But we're still a human being. Everyone, every single man and woman must work to be like God, to achieve sanctity, mm-hmm. a holiness that everyone is called to.
In 1992, the Maronite Church revised its liturgy and the way its priests dress to reflect its ancient Eastern roots. Since then, you'll find incense and candles often used, among other symbols, to express the faith.
It's used much, but also it's like in the psalm, "Let my prayer be elevated to you, God, like incense." Transports you, if I can use this verb. It's transport everyone from earth to heaven.
And I remember also when we were baptizing my little girl, we were all given a candle and we made a procession around the church with the baby.
At the end.
Yes.
Yes. That means now each baptized in Christ is becoming a light, like Jesus told us. Everyone must be the light of Christ. And the newborn or new baptized, it's also becoming, with the whole family, Christian family, lights.
And the fact that we were asked
yes,
to make a procession around
it's
the
a light
church.
Not only where I'm sitting, light wherever I go, wherever I work, wherever I move, I'm light. I must light the others.
And the very fact that we're making a circle around the inside of the church is also very
it's
symbolic.
This procession inside the church. It's very important in the Maronite church, but also in the other Eastern churches. That means the church is a family with Jesus Christ, is moving all the time under his blessings and the meaning of evangelizing. And everything is done under his blessings, but doesn't mean it's a passive church. It's a church in movement. It reveals our roots. It's a transmission across centuries and millenaries.
Maronite Father Jean Muhana, head of Vatican Radio's Arab Department. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.